Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. It is 5 past 5 and you're listening to Men Talk. With me in the studio today is Miles Rendell, Paul Myers and Paul Klogman. Hello.
Hello.
Hello there. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Welcome. Thanks for coming in. For anyone listening at home, you're more than welcome to join us. Instead of me giving out on the information, I'm just going to press this button.
Please call 952-78-4000. Email studio at tre.radio. Send us a WhatsApp on +34 645 99 67 95.
It's even left over from the breakfast show because it's saying what a beautiful day, because I used to play that in the morning. So yes, very lazy, exactly. There's an article that I found this morning that really made me chuckle, and I thought it would be a great one to share with you. So the headline is Telltale Signs You're One of Life's Winners. And then it's got a list of things that kind of show you that you're winning at life. And it says, how many can you tick off your list? We don't need to go through all of them, but some of them I thought were quite funny. Some are obvious things. You're in good health. So, yeah, if you're in good health, that's obviously a massive thing to say that you're winning at life. Because if you're not, then obviously that can massively be impacting your life and quality of life. You have a job you love. You have a bit of spare cash in the bank. This one made me laugh. You can eat what you like without gaining weight. I know people that do that. That's horrible. How does that happen? Surely are you not one of those people?
I'm not one of those people. No. I'm two of those people. It's just an illusion.
No, but I've got friends that literally have horrendous diets and are like stick thin.
That's the advantage of heroin addiction.
Oh no, don't say that. You can't say that.
I didn't.
No, you didn't.
No.
No, but I don't get how that happens.
It's just unfair, isn't it?
It is unfair. Yeah. It is unfair.
Yeah. The rest of us eat absolutely nothing and look like the side of a house. It's just not
terrible.
It's not fair.
I don't understand how it can be. Obviously, people have got different metabolisms, but I do find it weird how it can be so different. You know, some people look at a piece of cake and put on half a stone, and other people's can eat 5 cakes and don't, it doesn't touch them. It's just
not fair.
Life is not fair.
There's just no rhyme or reason to it sometimes.
No.
And I don't like any of those people that do that.
No, exactly. You have good skin. Is that important? Do men worry about their skin?
Oh, all the time.
Oh, the number of products I've got.
But I mean, has it been not necessarily worried, but maybe when you were younger, when you were at school, is skin a thing?
I never was particularly worried about skin.
Okay.
Skin problems. I don't recall ever having a major, like a pimple problems when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I probably did, but I don't remember it, and I've never really worried about it.
No.
Yeah.
Anyone else never thought about skin?
Not really.
No.
Not really. I think since a teenager, I think at school people with a lot of spots got a little bit of grief, but since then I can't think of
No.
That's great fun doing that.
Do you look after your skin?
I have a regime. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a regime, a nightly moisturiser. But that's more because tight skin feels horrible and you feel itchy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think. Or I've just got used to it.
Yeah. You're naturally sporty. See, I'd like to think of myself as naturally sporty, but I don't think I am.
What's naturally?
What's sporty?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. You're sporty.
I like to think of myself as sporty. I don't know. I watched the women's final the other day.
that's pretty sporty.
Doing it.
Oh,
yeah, being active, getting out there.
Yeah, well, is it? I suppose when you want to get out and do something, I suppose it's naturally.
Yeah, exactly. It's whether you're making yourself doing it or just doing it naturally.
I guess I actually consider myself sporty because I do play a couple of sports and I try and keep active.
Yeah.
And so even just maybe going for a walk makes me feel sporty, right?
Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, that's all
right. So that's great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But we've all got a huge excuse at the moment, haven't we? I mean, you can't do any sport and it's 37 degrees out there.
Isn't it? Yeah.
What are you talking about? I played golf this morning.
Oh.
You have a thick head of hair.
Yes, tick that box.
Yes, yeah. Well done. You are naturally stylish. Do people think of themselves as stylish?
All the time.
Say to them, you're stylish.
No, I say I'm definitely stylish all the time.
I can't imagine thinking of myself as being stylish. Oh. Isn't it something... Don't say.
Definitely.
But isn't it the kind of thing that's something that people compliment you on? People say, oh, I love your style, you look great. And it's like, oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, I think people try to be stylish. They try to... their interpretation of style, I think that people try to do that naturally.
You know the thing that's more noticeable when people really aren't stylish? So there's kind of like everybody could be something, and you get very stylish people.
Yeah.
The guys are always ironed and immaculate and everything else. But you really notice the ones that get it wrong.
Yeah, I suppose. Yes, they stand out more.
Much more.
Although isn't getting it wrong a style in itself?
Possibly. Yes.
No, that's what people that don't have style think.
That's what I was getting at.
And they say, yeah. And it's like, yeah, but I'm wearing a red hat and green shoes. Isn't that cool? And you go, honestly.
But there's an interesting, because sometimes it's opinion, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's quite subjective.
Of course,
you know, some people will think, oh, I love their style. And other people go, really? I always think they look a bit odd. Like it's a real sort of subjective. And clashing colours. I mean, again, you'd think the whole green red thing. I know you're just saying that as an example. You'd think, oh, no, that wouldn't work. But some people could really.
Yes.
Italian men can carry off a lot more than
you're just thinking about a Gucci belt right now. That's all you're thinking about.
No, literally, I remember being in Italy years ago, and you'd see men of all different ages, shapes, and sizes. It wasn't about just being a good-looking man. They can just carry stuff off that you think, God, if my husband or my friend or my dad or whatever was wearing that, they wouldn't look the same.
I think some men of especially Italian men of elegance.
Yeah.
Elegant men can actually carry off these different colours, I think, very well.
Yeah.
I think very well. And Italian men will be a good example of that.
Yeah.
And myself, of course.
And I believe that the Italians spend something like three times as much of their disposable income on clothing as people from the UK.
Well, there you go.
So it's obviously skincare. Considered important. And,
And skincare as well.
And skincare.
Mm. Well, sandwiches. Apparently, we are losing our appetite for sandwiches. The Great British Sun is facing an unprecedented cost of filling crisis. As well as soaring prices for ingredients, the sandwich is also under threat from working from home, changing tastes, and staff shortages as manufacturers. I remember eating a lot more sandwiches when I was younger than I do now. I don't think have a sandwich these days. I wondered whether you
it's
did.
Not a very Spanish thing, is it? I think
no.
More likely to in the UK. I think as a fast food they're much more available. And
but what about making it at home? If you were having lunch at home, would you make yourself a sandwich?
Tend to avoid bread these days.
Yeah, a lot of people tend to avoid bread. You know, the effect of bread. People are aware of that more.
Mm.
I think, but I don't think that sandwiches are going out of style. I think people still enjoy a sandwich. You know,
you?
I do, absolutely.
Oh, you do.
I had three before I came in today. So, I think that. I mean. That's just newspaper filler, right?
So. Yeah.
Much like bread is filler. It's a health thing, isn't it? Bread is evil. We all know bread is, you know, evil.
Yeah.
It does nasty things to people. And and you'll see now if they were to do the survey and then say, well, how many wraps are there available in that on that same shelf as there were 15 years ago? You'll find that the sandwich space is filled by wraps or other things. So it's just changing.
Are wraps loads better than bread? I don't know, because I always think, wrap
flatbread
much better than bread.
I
is
always
it?
Always find them just... very very doughy, very bready.
Yeah, I get the ones from the supermarket, the brown ones. They make me feel better about myself having a brown wrap instead of a white.
The colour makes a big
makes
difference.
Makes a huge difference.
They're mini chocolate rolls. They're not wraps. They're mini rolls.
Yeah, that's true. Aldi is looking for an official beer taster where you get to try booze for free. The job will require the taster to have a passion for beer and pints of enthusiasm. See what they did there? From smooth craft ales to refreshing IPAs, Aldi's official beer taster will receive 10 different products to review. To be in with a chance of landing the role, all budding beer tasters need to send an email explaining why they should be chosen. Joking aside, do you think this is something you could do and would enjoy doing and be able to give a valuable input to?
Absolutely not.
No?
No.
Why?
I've no interest in beer personally.
Oh, you're not a beer drinker?
Not a beer drinker at all. Except for, you know, I will correct that. Except for a can I say Guinness? Oh,
you
I just
can.
Did.
Yep.
I'm so sorry. Yeah.
No, all good.
That's
okay,
all.
So
I'm not a beer connoisseur at all. I have no interest in it at all. So.
Okay. Mars?
Yeah, I could have a bash at it. Why not?
Yeah.
Send me 10 beers and I'll let you know.
So you kind of like all different beers. It wouldn't just be lager. You could give an opinion on ales and all different.
Yeah, I like different beers from around the world, really.
Okay.
I like to have whatever's local when I go somewhere. And one of the things I love about going back to the UK is being able to have a proper pint of beer. Which you can't get here, but
no,
you know,
you could do it.
I just wonder how much they're paying.
And where is this Aldi?
In the UK, it's all in the UK. Yeah. You have to be a UK resident
of course,
to happen.
Yeah, okay.
I just thought, could you do it, Paul? Do you think?
No, probably not. But beer is liquid bread, and bread is evil. This bread just makes you fall over quickly.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think it sounds like a great reason for us to say Aldi on the air.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. We're giving them some free publicity. Yes, okay. We'll stop saying Aldi. I just said it again. tattoos. This lady who is 42 is saying that she was 17 when she got a tattoo as an act of defiance. Now she's 42 and a mum. She's had the tattoo removed. It looks kind of like a panther, I think, and it's sort of near her belly button. You can see here. With a short jump on,
yes.
You can see it there.
And she said, listeners at home can see that.
Yes, they can't. No, but you can. Her children didn't understand why she had drawn on herself, so she, you know, got really kind of embarrassed and it became inappropriate as she became a mum. So I just thought we'd talk about tattoos. I always wonder that, to be honest, when I see people covered in tattoos, what they're going to look like when they're a certain age and the elasticity of their skin has changed. I mean,
I recall having dinner with a German couple and he was covered in tattoos up to the edge of his cuffs, so you had no idea that he was tattooed, and his wife hated it. And she said, I absolutely love him, but I hate his tattoos. And she said, our daughter is 21 or something like that. And she said, like, Mum, I would like a tattoo of a small dolphin above my bikini line. This is absolutely true. Mum, not bikini line, but bikini.
Yeah.
And she said, yes, you could do that. And when you are my age, the beautiful little dolphin will be a misshapen whale.
Exactly. Well, that's what this panther looks like. It's a really strange shape. So do you, you're not a fan of tattoos?
I don't get it. At all. If you say someone you've got to have the same haircut for the rest of your life, or you can only wear one pair of shoes, but then you've got to scribble over it with another pair of shoes to hide the original pair of shoes because now you hate them and they're misshapen. I don't get it at all, and I often wonder why people don't just have a tattoo that says, I'm interested, ask me something. Because it's kind of a lot of the time what people are doing. And I don't wish to offend people with tattoos.
Yeah.
You're nice, Mr. and lady with a tattoo, but I just don't understand what the.
It's obvious to me tattoos are evil.
Like bread and
like
beer.
Like bread and beer.
Bread and beer.
And I personally think they're just attention getters. That's all it is. Nothing more. Nothing more.
Interesting. Yeah. I get the point of when people have a small tattoo or whatever that represents something. I understand why it's something discreet, you know, something that's personal to them. But yeah, when people are like covering their whole bodies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got.
And that's the fashion that's really coming up now, isn't
it? Yeah, definitely.
It's see people with full
literally
arms
covered.
And,
yeah, and women as well, not just men, absolutely covered, and they love it. And you know,
but you do wonder.
Them,
I mean, I believe that the lady in the article had hers cut out with surgery, but I just wonder what happens if you get bored of your full arm. Tattoo.
Well, yeah, I don't think you can. I mean, it's complicated to either cover it up or to get or to as you say, have it cut out when it's a small thing, but when it's all over your body, and you know, a lot of the time, the people who are having them done are of a certain age and look a certain way, and you just know that they're not going to look that way their whole lives, and therefore, neither are their tattoos. It's going to...
But they don't realise that. They don't think about that.
No.
It's a very natural now thing.
I mean, it's such a permanent thing, as you said, Paul. It's not the same as a pair of shoes or a haircut. It's
I think we need someone with a tattoo in this discussion too.
We just have to like mediate a bit more. Tattoos are fine. Mr. Tattoo person sitting next to me, I haven't got a problem with them.
We better take a break there.
Talk Radio Europe.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Men Talk with me in the studio today, Miles Rendell, Paul Myers and Paul Klogman. There is an article with the headline, Put It Away, Girls, and Spare Us This Parade of Toxic Femininity at the Gym. The article's talking about women, young women particularly, you know, in Lycra, pouting in the mirror, taking selfies of themselves, where the name comes from. They're saying they're victims of our sex obsessed culture, desperately trying to fit in. How do you feel about people at the gym taking photos and videos and things like that whilst they're working out, and women like wearing makeup and all that kind of stuff?
Bizarre. I think it's just
really bizarre.
I was a gym down here actually a while ago. I don't like gyms, but I was in there and two young fellas walked in, got their phones out, did some lifts, did a video, said goodbye to everybody, left, and I thought,
no,
that's genuinely just saying to everybody, yeah, I spent an hour in the gym, or, you know, that. And there was another guy, so I was just going between three things, circuiting, and there was another guy that kept stopping and was on the phone for ages, taking pictures, doing things, and then literally did, so I started counting. It was like 15 seconds, but then had like a 7 minute break, and I knew this because I was counting what I was doing. Yeah. And I find the whole thing narcissistic and bizarre. Just bizarre.
Yeah. So he literally wasn't there to work out. He was there to make people think that he was there.
He was there to show that he was working out. I've been to the gym, asked me about the gym, look how fit I am. And there's also this thing about gym is a sport. Look, I can gym. Look at me, I'm good at the gym.
Yeah.
What, you lifted something? What does it mean you're good at the gym? You go there to do something. It's like this, you know, take a picture of every meal I have while you're at it. Mm. Oh, yeah.
They actually asked Norman Wisdom, remember Norman Wisdom?
Yes.
If he had a gym in his house, and he actually replied and said, no, he left years ago.
very good. Yes, it's a strange culture, isn't it? And I see so many people on social media posting photos and videos of themselves at the gym.
Can we ask more so why girls in very skin-tight gym outfits then walk around afterwards in the supermarket or whatever as if they're still in the gym?
Yes.
Maybe one of them can phone in and tell us.
Yes, I don't know.
It's exhausting following them around as well.
It is.
I know that sometimes I get, certainly not these kind of outfits, but leggings and a vest top or something, and people say to me, oh, are you going to the gym, or have you been to the gym? And I'm like, no, it's just
comfortable. You know what, you just called yourself out as being as bad as anyone that's in that article.
It's comfortable. I'm not talking about like a sports bra and like fluorescent whatever.
I wear pyjamas and slippers at home. They're comfortable.
Exactly.
I'm not going to go, look at a picture of me in the gym in my pyjamas and slippers.
No.
Now that would be truly evil.
Yes.
But
yes.
Evil. Beyond.
Yes.
Actually, you know what, in many ways it's very similar to what we were just talking about, the tattoos.
Mm-hmm. Okay, look at me thing. Yes,
look at me.
Yes, very similar. There's a really, really sensitive subject now. I almost didn't want to bring it up, but I thought, no, we can handle it. We can handle it. The headline is, and there's obviously more to it to the headline than the headline, shock horror, but the headline is, now Frankie Boyle jokes about raping Holly Willoughby. Frankie Boyle, of course, is a Scottish comedian who often tells offensive jokes. He famously has made jokes about the Queen, also Katie Price's disabled son Harvey. He got a lot of slack for making a joke about him. So he does kind of knowingly do jokes that are going to offend and upset people. And he's acknowledged that his new material might get him into trouble at the forthcoming Edinburgh Festival. I was going to say put it into context, but there isn't really context for the joke. He was just, yeah, he really was making a joke about raping Holly Willoughby. Obviously, spokeswomen for feminist campaign groups have all come out. How can
Yeah,
absolutely. How can a man in this day and age, how can anyone joke about violence against women, raping, all this kind of stuff? Clearly, it's not a laughing matter. I'm assuming nobody can dispute that. But I just thought it was an interesting point for discussion on comedy and whether there is a line that shouldn't be crossed with comedians, or whether comedians should be able to joke about whatever they want and people need to just chill out a bit.
I agree with the second part.
It's very, very difficult to draw a line anywhere, isn't it? Yeah. You start drawing a line and, I don't know, it's a joke. People have got to be able to, the right for, to offend people and to be able to accept that you can be offended and not shout it down all the time. I think it's important that that people can say things which some people do find offensive, and clearly in this instance designed to be so.
I mean, there'll always be people who are offended at comedy about specific things, you know, people making jokes about death. You know, if you recently lost someone, you might think, oh, how can they possibly do that, you know, and you'd find that more offensive. Or obviously if you have any connection to somebody who's been sexually abused, or obviously if you've been sexually abused yourself or raped yourself, then clearly this could absolutely hit the mark and be completely offensive. Trying to put it into some kind of context, you know, joke. I mean, I know it's not the same, rape compared to being blonde, but you know, when comedians are making jokes about women or mother-in-laws or blonde women or whatever,
or
you know,
the Irish or whatever
exactly, exactly. You know, if you couldn't ever make a joke about anybody or anything, then there'd be no comedy.
There's another aspect to that story is that the joke was about killing her first, but there seems to be no outrage about killing her. There seems to be all focus on the R word, which of course is wrong, but have we got used to jokes about killing people, so that's okay? So maybe in another time or another world, a joke about that would have been okay. The other thing to, I think it's worth thinking about on these things is Jimmy Carr got lots of stick over a Netflix documentary about a joke which out of context was, yeah, it was equally as offensive. It was about the Holocaust and about gypsies and everything else. When you see the whole routine in context, it's actually provocative to make you think, why is a joke like that funny, but a joke like that isn't funny? Because they're both sick. And actually, the media pick up on it was about the joke, not about the point he's making. And the point he's making, if somebody was talking about it afterwards and reviewing it, maybe they should have also been banned because he was doing the same thing. But the point he was making was about the joke. And then with the comedian in question, very, very intelligent guy. A lot of what we see on stage is really a very well thought out act. This wasn't a slip up.
No.
This is meant to be provocative. This is meant to make us talk about it and question it and everything else. And whether it should be allowed or not, when people stop laughing, that's when comedians then say, maybe I won't do that anymore. That bit of the routine sucks. I'll do the one about the three guys walking in a pub.
Which one's that? That's a good one.
It's an old gag.
Talking about the bad thing is never as bad as the bad thing.
No, very true. Why won't my chap see a doctor? So this comes from a problem page, and I thought it would just be an interesting one to speak about with you guys. Just as, again, it's a serious one, just the whole idea of men maybe not going to a doctor as easily as a woman would if there's
a firstly picture. I'm offended by the term chap.
Okay, sorry, it just says it here.
And how they can put that in black and white when almost 48% of the population Could also be yeah.
So how are we, you, about going to the doctor? Are you the kind of person that goes, oh, I'll be all right, you know, let it go, or are you quite good at going, oh, wonder what this mole could be, and going to get it checked out?
There's always a spectrum, isn't there, from people who never go to the doctor and presumably die an early death, and and the hypochondriacs who the day isn't complete without having consulted some medic somewhere along the line.
Mm-hmm.
We all try to beat a path down the middle somewhere, don't
you? Mm. Mm. Yeah, and I think I'm one of the chaps that would prefer not to go to a doctor.
Mm.
And so far, I've been, touch wood, been lucky with my health over the years.
And if you're honest with yourself, mm-hmm. why is that?
I guess it has to be the fact that I'm scared in case they find something.
Mm.
I think it's just basic as that, really.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't believe in doctors or I don't believe them. No, I just don't want them to find anything bad.
Yeah.
And then for that to ruin the rest of what life I have left.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a psychological thing, really.
Mm. I guess that's probably a normal thing, isn't it?
I think so, yes. Yeah.
The lucky listener can't see it at the moment, but half of my face is covered in a patch because I went to a doctor that advised me to do something following a result that came up. It burnt the skin off of my face.
Oh,
I got an infection.
Gosh.
I thought I had COVID or the flu, but I never once put it together with the fact that it was the medication that burned the skin off my face that gave me the infection and everything else. I did say, I'll tell you later, I didn't know it was going to happen.
No, I didn't either. I wasn't pushy for it.
And then I came home to carry on with the medication, having no idea it was the infection. And it was a woman, Deborah from Extreme Gene in Cordoba, that recommended it, said, you should see a doctor. That could be why you're feeling fluey. Walked in, saw a female doctor that said, oh my God, why didn't you see a doctor about this? You're just in time. So I wouldn't have done it, but it wasn't through fear of not doing it because it was a doctor that put me in the position in the first place. It's that women talk about these things, I think.
Yes.
And we don't. We go, you got something in your face? Oh, yeah, yeah. Do you want to be
out? It'll be fine, yeah.
Yeah, you'll be all right. Yeah. Just carry on. Yeah. Just stay out of some.
Yeah.
But the woman's recommendation was going to see a doctor.
Yeah, exactly.
And when she demanded that I did, and absolutely the right thing.
Mm.
And I'll do it again.
Yeah.
I'll do definitely. It again, I'll forget and not think.
Yeah, I mean, the point is, which I'm sure is obvious, the longer you leave things, the worse they can get. And, you know, that whole kind of fear of them finding something, you know, there's a million and one reports that we see on the TV, whether it's famous people or whatever, that say, go and get things checked.
Yep, yep.
Because if things, whatever it may be, yeah. if they're not caught in time or whatever, that's when things can be worse. So,
that's right. Yep.
You know, we all know that if we are kind of on top of our health and know what's going on in our bodies, then we're much more likely to be around longer, yeah, I guess.
Yeah. I know, absolutely right. But, you know, I'm a man, I don't need that kind of stuff. That's, you know, and that's it. That's the attitude, I think, anyways, to a large extent. That is the attitude of many men, I think.
Mm.
I feel that, anyway. Mm. Yeah.
Well, as a woman, I felt the need to say what I just said.
Well, thanks very much indeed,
Anna.
We'll let you know.
We'll take a break and we'll discuss it.
Talk Radio Europe.
Your voice in Spain.
Hannah Murray. TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Men Talk with me in the studio today, Miles Rendell, Paul Miles and Paul Klugman. There's an article here talking about money. Cash secrets of snowflake generation. The snowflake generations may wear their heart on their sleeve, but they're a closed book when it comes to finances. A quarter of Generation Z, which is 18 to 24-year-olds, are secretive about finances. And 28% of millennials, which is 25 to 39-year-olds, are tight-lipped about cash. Just 10% of Generation X, 40 to 55-year-olds, say they are guarded on money, while 4% of baby boomers, 55 to 74-year-olds, say they are. So this is all to do with discussing how much money you have or don't have with your friends and maybe even family. I wonder whether that has changed throughout your life, whether you did it more when you were younger compared to now, or the other way round, you always have, you never have, whatever.
I think it's probably more to do with the age that you are and the amount of disposable income that you've got, really. I think that when you're young and setting out and don't have a lot of money, you're less likely to be as open about your financial position as when you're older and a bit more comfortable.
See, I'm the opposite. I'm the total opposite. When I was younger, and even not that long ago, to be honest, I've always kind of been quite open about not having much money, and kind of going, oh, you know, that sounds nice, I'd love to do that, but, you know, watching the pennies or whatever. I think it's kind of easier to be open about not having much money than being open about having money. Not saying that I have now, but more than I did 10 years ago. And I don't know, I think that obviously it's, if you've got money, you don't want to start telling everyone that. I mean, it doesn't come across well, does it?
That's right, because it won't last long if you do that.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, my dad, when I was young, he said, never discuss how much money you've got and politics and religion.
Yeah.
So never discuss them. That's it.
No.
What about football?
Football's all right, yeah. Mm. Although football can be evil.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's nobody's business.
It's absolutely nobody's business how much money you've got or haven't got. It's irrelevant. Yeah. So, yeah.
And it can change relationships as well.
But we are talking about snowflakes here.
Yes.
This winds back perfectly to the earlier story about that you're more attractive if you've got money in the bank. So anybody that's not confident about where they are in life, perhaps because they don't have money, is that reading something, I'm not attractive because I don't have money in the bank, mm-hmm. so therefore I'll keep it to myself. I am rather alarmed that somebody wrote the snowflake generation, as we're now taking something which is a behaviour, perhaps, or an opinion, mm-hmm. and putting it on a whole generation as if everybody is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I think whoever wrote that probably unzipped their jack boots, put up their feet with pride, and thought, oh, that's a good one. I think that's really odd.
Mm.
Well, it is the Daily Mail, so, you know.
Yeah. No, it is odd.
Is it the Daily Mail? It must be the Daily Mail.
It is odd to say the
whole generation of snowflakes.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is completely
not
wrong.
True.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Opinions on money and sharing.
Again, I agree with Paul. It's up to you. I think his dad's advice is completely right. It's my business how much I say. But I think the other side of it is when people talk about how much money they do have, opposed to how much money they don't have. That's just vulgar, and that's not attractive.
No, exactly. It would be weird, wouldn't it? If I'd find it really strange if you were spending time with someone, friend, whatever, and they started to tell you how much money they had in their bank, I'd kind of be like,
seems to imply that 96% of over whatever it was 60 year olds or whatever go around telling you how much money they've got all the time, which is not a conversation we often have, is it?
No, exactly.
Although I think that the ladies who are taking selfies in the gym and dressed in those, would love to know how much money most men have got.
Yes.
You know, and make their choices accordingly. So.
In parts of Asia, it's an opening part of the conversation. Hi, I'm Paul. Like, where are you from? London. Oh, yeah. How much do you earn?
Yeah. Really?
An opening part of the conversation. And very normal when you go,
how interesting.
Huh? My answer's always, more than you.
They seriously do?
Yeah. And it's
quite comes out. And as a Westerner, what do you do? Do you answer them or go, I'm not telling you that?
Kind of explain that that's a personal question to ask in our culture.
Yeah, okay, interesting.
Yeah.
So you get around it.
Or then just make something.
Yeah, or just you could swear. You could swear,
Millions.
That's right.
This is an interesting one. Boys get lessons about periods and menopause alongside girls. So that's the headline. I'll read in a bit more detail. Schools will be told to stop splitting up pupils for sex education classes so boys grow up with a better understanding of female health issues. Doctors will also receive additional training on contraception and the menopause as part of a 10-year women's health strategy for England, which was launched a couple of weeks ago. Ministers want to tackle a culture of medical misogyny, which leaves women struggling to access the same quality of care as men. The government has set an ambition to ensure women and girls have their concerns taken seriously. It comes after 84% of people told a consultation women often feel they are not listened to when they seek help from the NHS. Boys and girls will be taught about women's health, including the menopause, from an early age, with schools asked not to split them up for lessons on relationships, sex and health. Do you remember having any kind of sex education at school and how it was and whether it was mixed? You didn't have any?
No, no,
we did.
Not at all, no.
You did?
Yeah,
not at all.
Yeah, we did.
And was it any good?
Sort of like you giggle because you start to see a lady's boob. and things like that. It's just, just so it's more like that. Yeah, but I think it's good. And why not teach humans about humans and other things? Interestingly, halfway through that article, it said that doctors will be told, if doctors don't know this already, then this is quite alarming.
No, I know.
So which one are you? You're different. Never seen one of those before. I mean,
imagine.
Yeah, so should kids learn? Yeah, why not? Who cares? You know, they might learn why their mum is, you know, different this morning than the day before. You know, and then it might encourage them to be a doctor.
Do you think it was, do you wish that you had have done sex education at school? Do you think it would have made any difference? Do you think it's better that kids are learning that now?
It's difficult. Yeah, I think it's better that they are learning it now. It's difficult to say whether I would have been better for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to go personally into my sex life, right. But it turned out pretty good, actually. So, you know, I don't think I missed too much. But,
but no, you think it's better that the kids learn?
I think it's better that the youngsters, they do understand what goes on in the human body with women and women for men too.
Yeah,
you know, it's not just one way.
Yeah. I think it's really good that it should be together. It shouldn't be separate. And together, boys and girls, whatever, you should learn about what happens with each other's bodies all throughout puberty, throughout your life, what can happen when you're older with the menopause, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important.
Yeah,
I'm surprised it's even a discussion.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll take another break.
Talk Radio Europe.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the last part of Men Talk. With me in the studio today is Miles Rendell, Paul Miles and Paul Klogman. So, there's an article here talking about books. And in schools or college, it says undergraduates are informed that reading William Shakespeare's Hamlet, Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift, and Jane Austen's Persuasion may trigger feelings of distress and trauma. Critics branded the warnings the height of stupidity and claimed that students could be deterred from discovering some of the world's literary treasures. It states, apart from Austen's Pride and Prejudice, the other set texts contain some material, including depictions of violence, assault, or self-harm, that some students might find distressing. What do we think?
Probably why I've been traumatised all my life. Being made to read all of these things and not told beforehand.
Because television and films don't have any of that stuff in it, do they?
No, exactly.
Which is really good.
Hamlet is far more distressing than the Line of Duty.
When you've stopped playing Grand Theft Auto, come over here and...
That's right.
No, don't get freaked out. It's holding a skull.
It wasn't very long ago when I heard that there was a university that tried to ban clapping.
Clapping? What's wrong with clapping?
Because it caused people anxiety, having a lot of noise around
them.
The noise? The noise, yeah.
No.
Yeah. They wanted people to do the glad hands.
I think it was offensive to people with one hand.
Yeah, it was indeed, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so pathetic.
Oh,
yeah.
No, isn't that
pathetic.
Madness?
It was absolute madness.
But they also, in some schools, they don't do sports day and things like that because it's unfair for the kids that aren't sporty. Mm-hmm. That kind of, I've heard
well,
that as well.
Well, it's unfair for the kids that are sporty or kids. Kids
exactly.
Generally.
Exactly. It's really important for on that side of things for kids to understand that they're not always going to win.
Yeah.
You know, and when they grow up...
They understand teamwork.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's also important, back to the books part of it, is that it's important to know how things were all these years ago, how things were looked at, how things were written, and to use that to study and encourage people to learn more about, you know, what they can do in the future, but to understand that that's the way the world was.
Is this a slippery slope where we then get history and say in 1066, it was okay, the Normans came over, they had some tea, Harold got a spoon in his eye, but he's okay, there was no violence. I think you're insulting anyone, even the snowflake generation, which I'm sure is hidden somewhere in the subtext. I think you're insulting them to think that they can't read something which is fantasy and be offended by it, particularly something which age-old towns.
It is strange, though. Sometimes you watch old films and some of the attitudes that are expressed there are a little bit near to the knuckle now. You wouldn't be doing it anymore.
Yeah.
I even watched The African Queen a couple of weeks ago, which is a fabulous film with Dirk Bogarde and Catherine Hepburn.
Humphrey Bogart.
Sorry, yes, Humphrey Bogart, of course. Yeah. And the depiction of the native Africans in the opening scenes was actually quite difficult to watch.
Mm. It was shot at Shepperton, so there probably weren't many African natives.
Indeed, there were. Yeah, that's where they let all of the parakeets out, isn't it?
But plus on top of that,
so that's a rumor, right. But apparently that's not true. Really, no. It's another great one. Yeah.
But all that violence is so. It's good to know that in the Old Testament, the Bible, there is no violence whatsoever, which is brilliant. You know, that's just the way it should be, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Probe into child NHS hormone treatment. That's the headline. I'll read a bit more. Sajid Javid is launching a review into how the NHS gives gender hormone treatment to children. The health secretary hopes it will lead to an overhaul of how the health service treats under 18s who question their gender identity. Critics accuse specialist NHS gender services of being too willing to give puberty blockers hormones to stop such things as breasts or facial hair developing. I cannot believe that happens. That's just madness. That's happened. That kids at an age where they haven't yet gone through puberty are able to know that they want to change sex or that they don't want... I mean, I just find that absolutely madness.
As young people, we go through changes and we change our minds about things. I had an invisible dog when I was very small, and then I became that dog for a few weeks and would only walk around on all fours. Had I been 3 or 4 or 5 years old, and I said, I want a species change, for example, and it was possible. You know, everybody has to feel comfortable with who they are and what they'll become. How early they get to decide it is probably bordering on madness.
But how early are they able to decide that sort of thing? You have to wonder where the influence is coming from for them to even talk about that or think about that. It's got to come from someone. It's not coming from them.
No,
it's not coming from
them.
It's coming from adults.
I'm not entirely sure about that. I know of a few people, not personally, but having read biographies, etc., of people who have known from the age of 4 or 5 that they're in the wrong body and
how interesting.
And they wanted to change their identity.
I'd buy it, but I wonder whether you know 100% of them should go through with it before they get a chance to.
I absolutely agree with that. Yeah.
Like a tattoo, so everybody should be who they want to be and get as much help as we enable these people to be happy and successful in life. But maybe the very young,
but maybe not minds. When they're 2 or 3 years old.
Well, not 2 or 3 years old. But this is saying pre-puberty, and you know, sulky teenagers change. Excuse me, sulky teenagers and snowflakes. We change our minds through life. You know, there's fashion. There's things we do then, like maybe get a tattoo that we regret later.
Mm. I wonder if, Miles, those people you're talking about, as an adult, you know, it's easy to kind of look back and go, I've known since I was 4 or 5 years old. Mm-hmm. Whereas when they're going through it at the time, whether they're that confident at the time or whether just looking back, you think...
It's very difficult to know, isn't it?
It's really difficult.
Yeah.
Really difficult.
That's a good point, Anna. That's a very good point, yeah.
Because, when I interview authors, you know, they might say, oh, I've been writing since I was a child, you know, I've always been writing. And you think, well, I know it's a totally different thing and a much more serious thing you're talking about, but, you know, as well as writing, they're also probably kicking a football around the time. I've been playing football since I was a kid.
Before I was born, I was playing football.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, that's the sort of thing, really.
Yeah. Okay. How schools of girls... This is all on the same subject. We've got just over 5 minutes, so we've got plenty of time to discuss this. How schools of girls return to... And this is what you were saying, Paul, about this coming from the adults. Return to top school after lockdown and said, we're now trans. Almost one in every 15 pupils at a leading secondary school identifies as transgender or non-binary. The majority have done so since most COVID-19 lockdown restrictions were lifted last summer, raising concern about the impact of online trans influencers on youngsters who were largely confined to their homes for months. A teacher said the pupils involved were aged between 11 and 18. Almost all were girls and most identified as non-binary. It's really hard to kind of relate to this, isn't it? Because it's so easy to kind of go, what, this...
I think it's hard to relate to because it sounds like it's made up.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
There's the top score. There's no mention of the top score. I just think that this is a real... We need to stick something in peace.
Well, again, I don't know about that. I think it's an age that people go through when they are less binary than they become later. And I remember my sister, who was at a top secondary school, and all of the girls in her house had crushes on one or on a number of the older girls, and it was on, oh, who's your crush and whatever. It was considered completely natural.
But that is natural, because I went through that as a boy at school. I had a crush on the head boy at the school, and that's a normal thing for kids to go through.
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to then identify as being non-binary, does it? Which is a term which never existed enough.
That's right. See, again, that's an external influence that's causing that and driving that. Do you know, I actually read an article, you may have seen this, the activists have wanted people now to stop when they find skeletons in the ground, like, you know, ancient skeletons. They want to not decide whether they were male or female, because they don't know that that person, when they were alive, identified as being a man or a woman. I'm serious. That was the article. And that, to me, is...
I think we should take defending skeletons very seriously.
Yeah.
Most of them are very, very evil. You realise that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's bizarre.
Yes,
I mean, that just
blew me away. You know,
totally.
Talk about complete influence. That's just crazy.
Yeah, that is nuts, isn't it? I mean... What you were saying, Miles, about the fact that the words weren't used then, you know, I actually think it's really good that all of this kind of stuff is being talked about, and there are words to describe all these different things, and how there'll be a lot, and there probably always has been, confused kids that feel like they're born in the wrong body and they don't feel like themselves. For sure, that's the thing. We can't deny that that's the thing. So I think it's good that there are labels for that now, and people have the language to express how they feel about themselves and their bodies. So I think that's great. But at the same time, it is hard to believe that so many people are feeling that way, which is where the kind of outside influence
comes in. Yeah.
As if people are thinking that it's now cool.
That's right.
It's fashion.
But I can't afford a tattoo, so I'm going to change my gender.
Yeah.
Look how much attention I'm getting.
One in 15 is not a lot of people, actually, is it? Which was the numbers that they're coming up with there. In a class of 30, that's two girls.
It's way more than we had in our school.
Yeah.
It's enough for the Daily Mail, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, an unnamed school.
Yes, yeah. Okay. We've got one more article, and we've got to make it last 2 minutes.
Okay.
It's again,
yes, I agree.
It's again on the same kind of subject. Child abuse row over genital tucking briefs that fit four-year-olds.
I didn't see this one.
So, a transgender underwear designer has been accused of child abuse for selling pants that seek to flatten the genitals of boys as young as four. Doctors warn that the underwear, which is made to flatten the side profile of the pelvic area, could cause infertility. The garments are sold by Carmen Lou, a company established by a transgender former ballet dancer that describes itself as the UK's first brand to design flattening and tucking underwear.
Well, I have to say that they actually are very, very comfortable.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. So
but very expensive.
Yes, they are. £35.70 they are, which is expensive for one piece of underwear. But the fact... Oh, look, she's got her whole arm tattooed.
Excellent.
Oh, isn't that delightful?
It's not a lot of work to tuck away a 3 or 4 year old.
No. It doesn't need much flattening, does it?
Really? You wouldn't imagine it would take a...
What's the engineering that's gone into this? We'll just do one less stitch.
Just put a bit of cotton wool bully on the front, that'll do it.
It's true, you wouldn't imagine it would take a lot of work, would it?
Right.
I mean, it's bizarre. These pants, just to show, just look like normal black
pants.
But yeah, I mean, do we not find this? I mean, this is just going along the same line of 4-year-olds, I mean, the 4-year-old isn't going to buy the pants, so the parents will have bought the 4-year-old the pants.
Yeah.
So the parents is enabling the 4-year-old to go, I want to look like a girl, and buying him the pants to enable him to do so.
Yep. And you were 2 minutes out of this.
No, it's 27 seconds.
It's been all you...
I filled it out.
You filled it up, Hannah. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
It's called very nice pants.
Very nice.
I like them. Yours look good, actually. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Do they? No, maybe they don't.
Don't.
Oh, I've got one back to front.
Oh, dear. Guys, thank you so much for coming
Absolute
in today.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Hannah.
Miles Randall, Paul Miles and Paul Cloakman. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank
Have
you.
A lovely weekend.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.